Ills of Jenna Cabot's mind had started to turn, judging by the twitching of her eyes. No. Why not? Obviously you found him attractive. If he's a decent man and there's chemistry, why not get together so you don't have to worry about sharing custody? If creating a family for Colt is your goal, then dating Peter should be a no-brainer. A priority, actually. Gentry couldn't argue with the main thrust of that logic. It, however, didn't consider two important variables. First, Peter Smith's feelings and personal life might preclude romantic entanglements. Second, and more important, her feelings for Ian. Gentry had never believed she'd fall in love, much less insta-love, but something about Ian had her by the throat, even if she didn't tell him so. He was the first man she'd ever been open with. Surely that meant something. Maybe Ian would come to that conclusion, too. Maybe, like her, he'd believe he'd come into her life for a reason. How about we get to know Peter before you marry me off? If you'd taken the time to know him before you got pregnant, you wouldn't be a single mother juggling work and childcare. Her mother sighed, while Gentry imagined a cartoon version of her mom's head exploding. What's your plan for Colt after Ian leaves? Daycare. With Colt's infection cured, he could attend Miss Linda's once Ian had left town. I thought you liked having help around the house. And what of the late nights we can expect to log here, with a launch? Gentry shook her head, wondering if she'd ever cross the line that would win her mother's approval. I'll figure the rest out. Daycare will give Colt other kids to play with, instead of a nanny who's always distracted by her phone. Is Ian always on his phone? Ian's not really a nanny. No, he's not. He's a bit of a lost soul, I think. Gentry's entire body tipped forward in shock. What? He doesn't know what he wants. The savior complex lets him avoid commitments. His fiancée must have called things off once she realized he had no plan for their life together. He's got a plan. She just didn't like it. In truth, Gentry liked it less and less the more she learned about the dangers involved. Ian's goals have life and death stakes. But of course, peddling tea is a far more worthy pursuit. Her mom touched her forehead to her desk. Why can't we have a single conversation that isn't laced with sarcasm? Habit. Gentry shifted in the hot seat, eager to leave. That's not funny. The increasingly prominent lines in her mother's face deepened. Even Hunter and I have less hostile conversations than you and me. Probably because you don't disapprove of everything he does and says. Her mom raised a skeptical eyebrow. Gentry conceded. Okay. So you two rarely agree, but he's not bothered by it, because he doesn't care about your opinion. If Gentry's brain hadn't been half asleep, those words would not have slipped out. It'd be too much to hope that her mom missed the revelation that her opinions did matter to Gentry, despite Gentry's lifelong insistence that they didn't. That truth filled her with self-loathing. Rather than seize on a moment of triumph, her mom folded her hands on her desk. Don't take this the wrong way, but I'm concerned that you've got too much going on now to adequately focus on your job. We should push some of your responsibilities to others until this Smith situation is resolved. Resolved? Like a single answer or act would make everything clear. There'd be no such resolution. Smith would be a permanent fixture of sorts, requiring her to compromise for the rest of her life. Her stomach turned over again, but she hadn't worked the past 10 months at this job to fail now. Quitting would hand her family more proof that she didn't have the mettle to stick with anything, that she wasn't committed or ambitious in any way like the rest of them. No. For better or worse, CTC was the tie that bound the Cabot family, and damn it, she was a Cabot. She needed to belong to her tribe, especially with Smith moving into the picture. I'll get it done. I know I dropped the ball this weekend, but I can finish today if you let me get to work. Don't humiliate me in front of everyone. This can't become a habit. I get that. Gentry knew she shouldn't bug her eyes, but a lecture from her mother delivered the same full-body jolt as a fork in the toaster. I'll tell your father about Peter Smith. She inhaled through her nose, then blew a sigh. I still can't believe you gave up control of your son's future. Control. Gentry had thought about that all night, to the point of making herself sick. Her conclusion? Relationships based on control never worked. Her mom should know this by now, because she'd never been able to control Gentry's behavior. Ian had been right when he implied that doing the right thing was the only thing in anyone's control. Maybe if you'd given up control years ago and tried to blend our family with Colby and Hunter, my life would have been happier. My relationships with them stronger. I never prevented those kids from coming over. You barely welcomed them. You never reached out. When her mother opened her mouth, Gentry held up her hand. We don't have to agree on that, or on Smith. All I'm saying is that my priority is to fill Colt's life with people who love him. I won't keep my son from Smith and his family because I'm afraid of sharing him. I hope you're not sorry. Gentry bowed her head and left the room, wishing she could leave the building entirely. But there were memes and tags to create and data to gather. At least none of her co-workers peeked their heads above the cubicle walls as she made her way to her workstation. She fired up her computer to check on the stats and analytics from the last rounds of Facebook ads they'd tested. Data analysis for her blog excited her more, but this had to be done. Gentry made notes on another round of postcards from the art team while trying to quell her mother's warnings and her opinion that maybe Gentry was an ungrateful screw-up who had no business being anybody's mother. When her desk phone rang, Hunter's name appeared on the screen. Her stomach clenched because she hadn't finished her analysis. He'd be even more pissed off about the delay than her mom. Hello? Hey, can you swing by my office? To the point and efficient, like always. Now? Yes. His flat tone gave no hint of his mood. Sure. She glanced at the clock as she hung up. Earlier she'd sat down to work, blinked, and now it was 12:30. She pressed her fingers to her temples. If she didn't complete this soon, she'd cause delays for other people waiting on her. She pushed back from her desk and walked the green mile to her brother's office. His assistant, Haru, barely looked up from her screen as she gestured for Gentry to enter his office. Hunter sat at the round conference table, where he normally huddled over spreadsheets with Bethany, the comptroller. In other words, that table was a circle of hell. At the moment, the takeout from Gab and Eat, his and Colby's favorite dive, caught her attention. With a slight smile, Hunter pushed a greasy burger and milkshake toward an empty chair and gestured for her to take that spot. She stood still, dumbfounded, the scent of fried onions and bacon filling the air. Granted, many people might consider Gab and Eat's food a serious punishment, but Hunter considered it a reward. "What's this?" "Lunch," he blinked, his literal interpretation of her question totally missing her point. "I mean, why? Are you cushioning the blow before you fire me or something?" He frowned, setting his burger down.
"Why would you think that?"
"In all the months I've worked here, we've never actually had lunch." She'd never seen him eat lunch, actually. He worked tirelessly, the way a shark never stops swimming. She'd bet he didn't realize he'd never shared Gab and Eat with her. Not ever. Not even as a kid. He and Colby always went without her.
"Sorry about that."
Hunter pointed to the empty chair again. While she took a seat and unwrapped the food he'd chosen for her, he said,
"I usually eat at my desk while I'm at work. After yesterday's big reveal, I wanted to check in with you. I got you a burger."
The food coma from all this fat and carbs wouldn't help her work better, but she couldn't say no. His sharing lunch meant working here was bringing them closer. She'd suffer Bethany, deadlines, these damn boring work clothes, and more for that. Cheeseburger grease coated the wrapper and her fingers, but she'd never complain.
"I'm okay. Tired, mostly." "You've looked better."
He said this matter-of-factly, like he did everything else. That trait always intimidated and fascinated her and everyone else. "Such a charmer. No wonder Sarah loves you."
"At least you know you can trust me to be honest."
His tongue retrieved a stray bit of onion from his lip.
"I hate having to read between the lines. Say what you mean. It's always the best policy."
"Okay, then." She held her hands up, sending her bangles jangling down her arm. "But here's a suggestion. Try gilding brutal honesty with a little tact."
"Point taken," he grinned.
The juxtaposition of his penetrating gaze and unexpected smile could be quite breathtaking. She forced another bite of the sloppy sandwich. "The Smith stuff is scary, but after today, it won't interfere with my work. I've almost finished updating the teasers, and I'm crafting a behind-the-scenes campaign for the next phase of our social media strategy." He slurped at his milkshake.
"You're late with that."
"I know."
"You know what's riding on this launch."
For weeks, he'd been driving everyone hard, poring over stacks of memos and financial papers, meeting with partners, distributors, and designers. He shouldered the weight of the company's success like Atlas, and she hadn't done as much as she could have to lighten that burden. "I'm sorry." She braced for a scolding, but he nodded and changed the subject. "Sarah swung by your house this morning to drop off some of Ty's hand-me-downs. Ian let it slip that you'd heard from Smith. He assumed you'd updated us."
"Well, now you know."
She sipped her milkshake to avoid a bunch of questions for which she didn't have good answers.
"Sarah's got it in her head that there's something between you and Ian."
He studied her now, as if she were one of his spreadsheets. Gentry stuffed a fry in her face, unprepared to discuss her sex life with her brother. Maybe he'd drop it if she let the comment pass. He sighed.
"Uh-oh."
She looked up.
"Why uh-oh?" "He's leaving, isn't he?" He says he is. She stabbed another few fries into a dollop of ketchup. Hunter was wise. Maybe he could help her with her plot. I still have a little time.
Time for what?
To convince him he could help as many people here as he can in Haiti.
Hunter shook his head. Don't do that.
Why not?
Whether due to childhood idolization or the simple fact that Hunter's decision-making skills exceeded hers by miles, she cared about his opinion.
He wiped his chin with a napkin.
Because he's obviously driven to honor his dad's legacy.
Is that worth risking his life? Or throwing away a chance at happiness?
Maybe his happiness depends on seeing it through. I get that. For some of us, leaving a legacy is in the blood.
She sighed, remembering how close Hunter had come to losing Sarah over the very same thing. If Ian's commitment to his project was even half as serious as her brother's was to CTC, she didn't stand a chance.
Well, I'd better tell Colby about Smith before she thinks I'm holding out.
Dad will be in soon, too.
Gentry rolled her eyes. My mom has probably already fed him her version.
Her version.
He tore open another packet of ketchup and squeezed it on his fries. He ate as if someone might come steal his lunch any second.
Can't you guess?
Hunter loaded his mouth with a wad of fries while waiting for details, so Gentry mimicked her mother by folding her hands in her lap and speaking with condescension.
It's going to be a disaster that you'll regret forever. You're an impulsive idiot for giving up control.
Gentry resumed her slouched position and normal voice, shrugging.
You know, the basic pep talk.
Hunter wiped his hands with another napkin and then reached across the table to take her hand. They hadn't shared a lot of one-on-one time, so the intimacy froze her in place.
There's not much love lost between your mom and me, but I think in this case, her fear is sincere and overwhelming her. You and I finally have a clue about how a parent's hopes and dreams and fears get tied up with their kids. Truth is, none of us has the best advice for your situation, and we're all a little anxious.
He released her hand and sat back in his chair.
Do what you think is best for your son. I'll stand with you every step of the way.
Thanks. Of everyone in her family, Hunter exuded the most power. If he said he'd be there to fix things, she believed it would be okay. She waved her hands in front of her eyes to stave off the tears, hoping he'd buy her lame excuse.
God, this burger has so much onion.
They're good, aren't they?
Hunter smiled, finishing his off in two bites.
I could eat these every day.
Gentry nodded, gulping the rest of her milkshake to cut the salt and grease, and fibbed,
Me too.
Ian's mother sat on the edge of Gentry's fancy sofa as if she feared she'd stain it, or possibly that it would swallow her whole.
Why don't you look happier?
Timmy had been recovered, and the police had two suspects in custody. Ian should have been ecstatic at the prospect of justice for Marie's death.
Guess I'm exhausted.
Infants will do that to you. The smile she offered Colt had nostalgia written all over it, too.
Can I hold him?
I love babies.
Ian placed Colt in his mother's arms. He felt like a father. She looked like a grandmother. Her glittery eyes suggested she'd shared that thought.
He's a darling. Such striking blue eyes.
She glanced at Ian.
When you have a child, I hope he or she has your green eyes.
Or Gentry's.
That thought struck faster than lightning and twice as hard.
Don't get your hopes up.
He needed to heed his own advice. Each day he spent here with Gentry and Colt peppered his soul with laughter, fire, and an alarming yearning to be still. But his dad's dream remained unfulfilled, and he wouldn't be much of a man or a son if he let it die with his father.
You never know. She tickled Colt's chin.
A traditional family life doesn't fit in with my plans, Mom. Not even if he wanted it with someone as untraditional as Gentry.
You know what they say about God and plans.
Trust me, dear. He's up there laughing right now.
She spared him a wry glance before returning her attention to the baby.
Gee, thanks.
I'm teasing. But you're young. Plenty of time to settle down once you've finished what you've started. Somewhere out there is a woman who'll knock your socks off. Maybe that woman is in Haiti.
Ian stared at a photograph of Gentry and Colt, thinking that woman was closer than his mom realized. The picture had probably been shot with a self-timer, like the ones she'd taken of him yesterday, on the sofa where his mom now sat.
He leaned forward and rubbed his eyes.
His head hurt from an all-night tug-of-war between what he wanted and what was best for everyone. If he thought Gentry could be happy, despite his odd schedule...
Mom, did you ever resent Dad for leaving you so often?
She let Colt clutch her forefinger while she made silly faces, encouraging some smiles.
Why would I resent someone who sacrificed so much to help others?
You never got lonely?
I had you, dear, my little man of the house.
Her distant gaze told him she was replaying the past.
You were a good boy.
Too good to be true, some might have said.
Was I?
He searched his mind for evidence of a little misspent youth. A trip to the principal's office, shoplifting a pack of gum, swearing. Anything to suggest that he'd been a normal kid with a carefree childhood. Gentry's opinions about him and his family had been gnawing at him. Had he made the choices he'd made of free will? Or had his deep-seated recognition that the Crawford way would be the only way to be close to his father driven most of his decisions?
Dad, can we hit the batting cages today?
Not today, Ian. There's been an earthquake in Cariaco, Venezuela, and I'm leaving to help deliver medical supplies.
Cariaco, Venezuela sounded way more exciting than Portland.
Can I come?
His father smiled.
You're only 9, son. You help your mother with the church fair this week. When you're older, then I'll bring you with me.
How much older?
We'll talk about it with your mom.
He patted Ian on the head.
Now, go play so I can pack.
But, Dad, I need to practice for next week's All-Star game. Can't we go for a little while?
Ask your mother to take you.
She's got a charity meeting.
Ian scowled, his voice rough. His dad knelt beside him.
I'm sorry you're disappointed, but you mustn't get angry when your mother and I work for the greater good. We are very lucky to live in a safe home, to have plenty of food and water, and to have clothes to keep us warm. Some people in this town and around the world don't have these things, and it's our duty to help them. Baseball is a wonderful pastime, and I know you love it. But isn't the welfare of others more important?
I guess so. Ian looked at his feet, still wishing he could go to the batting cages.
Good boy. It makes me proud when you make unselfish choices, Ian. That's the Crawford way.
The Crawford way. He'd heard that a million times before. Will you be home for my All-Star game?
I'll try.
He ruffled Ian's hair again, and then stood.
Now, go see if your mom needs help before you meet up with your friends.
Ian nodded, but he didn't go find his mother. He picked up his mitt and a tennis ball and went to the backyard, where he threw the ball against the brick wall over and over, feeling ashamed that he still wanted his dad to take him to the batting cages instead of going to Venezuela to help all those strangers.
Ian? His mother asked. You look upset. Sorry. An ancient memory.
Of what?
A conversation with Dad that ended with a lecture about the Crawford way.
The family motto. She smiled proudly.
Mm-hmm.
That came out as more of a grunt than an expression.
What?
She rocked Colt while speaking to Ian.
Sometimes I wonder.
Wonder what?
He used that put others first motto to justify his personal crusade. But let's be honest, there were two people he never put first, weren't there?
He'd never before criticized his father, and now had the sensation of falling through the sky without a parachute. His mother's offended expression didn't help.
Are you calling your father a hypocrite?
No, Mom. I'm just saying maybe he wasn't as selfless as everyone thought.
He died trying to save a child, his mom sputtered. That's the epitome of selflessness.
Don't get me wrong. I loved him. If I hadn't, I wouldn't have followed him all over the world or spent so much time with Archer and Stanley to see this thing in Haiti through.
Her expression turned pensive. Then she frowned.
Has living here, in all this grandeur, made you second-guess our values?
No, he lied. Another first. Lying to the woman who made sure there was strawberry jelly in the house because it had been his favorite. Who baked up a storm for every school fundraiser. Who'd read countless books to him and taught him how to drive.
You brought up marriage and family. That made me wonder if life the Crawford way can truly make a woman happy.
Specifically, Gentry. Not that his mom could answer that question. Only Gentry could. But asking her wouldn't be fair play on the cusp of Smith's arrival. He shouldn't add to the things already vying for her attention.
Happiness is relative. If people have some idealized idea of marriage and love, they'll be doomed to disappointment. I loved your dad and the life and family we created. It might not be for everyone, but I'm proud of what we accomplished together. The good we've done. Those things make me happy.
She patted his thigh, smiling. Your dad and I managed to give you a good start, too, right?
You did. Ian rubbed his mother's arm, eager to reassure her of his love and admiration. You did, Mom.
Are you giving up on CVAC?
No.
Was he?
The part of him that had laughed, loved, and been trusted in this home wanted to chuck it all and stay put.
Good.
Her relieved smile might as well have been a nail to the cross that was his life.
How's it coming?
Better, actually, since he'd been in touch with Marcus Fairfax, the auto dealer.
I might have secured some sweet vehicles, but it's not nailed down. Still waiting on some conditions. I think the guy wants us to involve his son in the venture. We could use the extra hands, but I don't know if the kid has what it takes. You'll figure it out.
When his mother raised Colt in the air, the baby treated her to a wide, wet smile. Colt had been unusually pleasant this past 30 minutes. Was that a sign? Will you miss this little one? He knows he's a darling, doesn't he? Colt did seem to have inherited his mother's ability to recognize her own appeal.
I'll miss him a lot.
An understatement, although Ian wouldn't miss the poop explosions.
Maybe Gentry will send you pictures.
She sure has enough of them.
On cue, they heard the garage door open.
The sound of Gentry's bag hitting the ground let them know she'd entered the house. Her heels clicked on the wood floor, but weren't loud enough to drown out her voice as she made her way toward the living room.
I survived the day from hell. I need sleep. Although, if you'd rather strip down and join me in...
She had rounded the corner to the living room, raising her heel to remove her shoe, and then stopped short when she saw his mother. Ian froze too, eyes closed, wondering what in the world his mother must think of him. Farah had ended their engagement only a month ago, and he'd already slept with another woman. Seemed he wasn't quite as good of a man as he, or his mother, had thought. Like father, like son.
Oh, hi, Gloria.
Gentry set her shoes aside and resumed her approach, head held high. Her demeanor reminded him of that first morning when he'd caught her in her undies. That image wouldn't help him do the right thing where she, Colt, and Peter Smith were concerned. Right now, she looked almost as irresistible as she had then, in her fitted summer mini dress that showed off her legs and every single curve.
Nice to see you again. Sorry about that crack. I'm a little punchy from lack of sleep.
Bad joke. She shrugged unapologetically, then gazed lovingly at her son.
He's beautiful, isn't he?
Adorable. I was telling Ian that I can't wait to be a grandmother.
His mother traded smiles with Gentry.
Oh?
Gentry's gaze sharpened, and an edge of jealousy honed her voice.
Is Farah what's-her-name pregnant?
Goodness, no.
His mom looked at him.
I'm just projecting.
Ian couldn't look at either woman, so he kept his eyes on Colt.
Ian will be a good dad and make pretty babies.
Gentry reached for her son, whom she smothered in kisses, like always.
Of course, no one will be as pretty as you, Boo. No one ever.
Thank you for helping out the other day with the blessing bags, Gentry.
His mom smiled.
We can always use extra hands and donations.
You're welcome. It was enlightening.
That's what my husband and I always believed.
Ian's mom didn't look at him, but he knew that message had been directed at him, not Gentry.
Well, I'll take off now. Nice seeing you again.
Ian laid his hand on his mother's lower back as they walked toward the door.
See you later, Mom.
Okay.
She kissed him on the cheek.
I'm so glad for your good news.
Keep me posted on your other progress.
Once his mother left, Gentry asked,
What good news?
Timmy's been recovered, and arrests made.
She jiggled Colt.
That's cause for celebration, but right now, I can't keep my eyes open. I'll take Colt and see if he'll nap with me.
He just woke up 90 minutes ago.
Ian gestured for the baby.
Leave him with me.
It's after 6. I don't want to take advantage of you. He cocked a brow.
Liar.
Jokes. Will wonders never cease? A saucy look lit up her tired eyes. I like the effect I'm having on you, McJay. Maybe you should come nap, too.
Sorely tempted, he sealed his mouth shut and gestured for Colt with his hands.
You look like hell. Get some sleep.
Gentry stepped closer.
Remind me again why we're keeping our hands to ourselves.
It wasn't easy to remember why, especially when she stood so close, it made him throb with the need to wrap his arms around her.
Because I'm going to Haiti, and you want a real family for your son.
Oh, yeah, she huffed, then settled her hand on his chest. Sometimes, when I'm near you like this, I forget to care about all that.
Electricity in her touch bound them together.
Me too.
So maybe we shouldn't ignore these feelings. I mean, what's the shortest length of time you could be in Haiti and get the center off the ground? He shrugged.
To cement relationships with local government and hospitals, secure donor money, and an ongoing medical supplies relationship. Train enough locals. Another year? Maybe 9 months.
Maybe I could wait 9 months.
He grabbed her hand and kissed her knuckles.
Smith will be here in a few days, and you could feel differently soon.
She withdrew her hand.
It's bad enough that my mom is pushing me to be with him. Now you?
Your mother?
The idea that her family might push her into Smith's arms punched him in the gut. He didn't know Smith, but he hated him already.
She doesn't even know the guy.
If I'm with Smith, the shared custody problem is solved. Ian's face must have reflected disapproval, because Gentry said, I know, she's twisted. Although there's a certain logic to it. And as you like to point out, Smith is Colt's dad. She snapped her fingers. Insta-family. Her words tumbled over him like 10 gallons of ice water. Jealousy never suited him, so he pushed away from it hard.
Then take your mom's advice.
Don't pretend you don't care. Even if you've decided that we're a lose-lose situation, I still have feelings.
So do I.
Strong feelings. One that couldn't stand the idea of Gentry with any other man. They stared at each other while he took Colt from her.
Well, that's something then. Free of Colt, she yawned, stretching her arms wide. Let's not argue. I don't have a single working brain cell left. I need some sleep. She kissed Colt's head and, without waiting for a reply, wandered to her room. He stood there, holding her son, with a bunch of words stuck in his throat. Maybe they'd come out if he could answer one preposterous question for himself before Smith arrived. Was he already in love with Gentry Cabot?
Chapter 16. Relief. According to Merriam-Webster, removal or lightening of something oppressive, painful, or distressing. According to me, Smith's demeanor.
Gentry, relax, Ian called from the kitchen. Your heels will wear a rut in the hardwood.
Nothing irked her more than being ordered to relax, especially following a long week of rising stress levels in the office and the anticipation of meeting Smith. 5 days that had felt like 10.
I need wine.
Not a good idea.
Ian came out of the kitchen with a clean binky for Colt. Smart thinking, because Smith would be here any minute, and she didn't want him scared off by Colt's crying.
Since when has that ever stopped me? She scoffed and started for the kitchen.
Ian blocked her.
You'll want to have your wits about you.
Wits? She'd lost those days ago. Who could keep her head together when navigating so much gray area? She and Ian had shared a few tender kisses that went nowhere because their circumstances hadn't changed. There'd been moments where she, Ian, and Colt had felt like a perfect family. When the dream sparkled like pixie dust and she thought she could will it to be. Then Archer would call, and Ian's wall would go back up. Smith's arrival today would not improve matters.
I wonder if he's already checked in. She'd recommended the nearby B&B, Lakeside Cottages, and sent over a nice bottle of wine to kick things off on the right foot.
Probably.
Ian crossed his arms, looking rather grim.
I should go up to my room and give you two some privacy.
Don't leave me alone. Smith should meet you, considering everything.
She waved her hand between them, unable to find the words to describe their current relationship. She only knew that her heart chased him like a dog did a butterfly. Ian sighed and took up a position by the playpen. She kept pacing, occasionally adjusting photographs and other knick-knacks, anything to keep in motion, because when she stood still, her stomach lurched. The knock at the door caused her to flinch. The evening sun streaming through the picture window cast Ian in shadow. Deep down, she'd hoped Smith's arrival would make Ian rethink his future. Ian's expression remained aggravatingly neutral, although his silhouette took on a superhero quality, legs in a wide stance, arms crossed.
I'm right here with you. Take a breath.
She nodded, as if convincing herself that this had not been a colossal mistake. Smith, Peter, stood mere yards away. Her son's father.
A stranger.
The black metal door between them remained the only barrier between what was and what would be.
Gentry? Ian asked.
A second knock spurred her into action. She crossed to the door, her manolos clicking like offbeat maracas. Would Smith like her home? Would he be patient with their son? Who were his friends and family? What the hell had she done? She gripped the cold bronze handle, yanked the door open, and nearly stumbled backward. Smith's crooked smile flashed, although, unlike before, this time he offered it up awkwardly, instead of as a weapon of seduction.
Artemis?
Gentry crinkled her nose. We should probably use our real names now, although it'll be hard to think of you as anything other than Smith. He hesitated, both of them uncertain of the proper etiquette for this meeting.
My friends call me Smith, so you can stick with that.
He stepped into the entry, his eyes searching hers instead of exploring her home or hunting for Colt. She'd forgotten how tall he was, 6'3" or 4", and broad. Overwhelming, and as handsome as he had been that night in Napa. Okay, she tried to smile, but no one calls me Artemis.
Got it. Gentry.
Her name sounded funny coming from him. She'd reveled in their role-playing that night last year, loved the anonymity. Now, she'd have to expose herself, and that always wore her out. After an awkward embrace, she gestured toward the living room. Thanks for being so gracious about everything.
I'm blessed, or maybe cursed, by having been trained by my mom to confront awkward situations with extreme optimism.
doesn't mean I'm not uncomfortable, or make me a pushover, though.
But let's muddle through together and make the best of this. We got on well before, so I have high hopes we can manage this, too.
Gentry almost said something about his mother, knowing from the PI file that he'd lost her years ago, but she decided to wait until he wanted to share more.
I'll do my best.
Smith stepped down into the living room, at which point he noticed Ian. His brows rose and fell before he stepped forward and offered his hand.
Hello, I'm Peter Smith.
Ian Crawford.
Ian didn't smile or scowl when he introduced himself, nor did he specify his role in her life. How could he, with it still so unclear?
Humanitarian, friend, temporary nanny, lover. Soon to be a memory?
That thought lodged itself in her throat. She couldn't think of that now, though. Smith was here to meet his son.
Nice to meet you.
Smith mimicked Ian's aggressive posture. They stood there, each taking measure of the other, until Colt whimpered from behind Ian, drawing a sharp turn of Smith's head. Smith's eyes sparkled, anticipation tinged with trepidation as he parted his lips. Gentry scooted around Ian to lift Colt out of the playpen. She dressed him in a gorgeous Armani Junior piqué and chambray shortall. The conservative outfit should appeal to Smith, whose taste in clothing apparently still leaned toward Brooks Brothers. She faced Colt outward, her grip a little more possessive than normal.
This is Colt.
Smith stood arrested, eyes wide, half dazed. She flicked a glance at Ian, hoping he might intervene, but he never looked her way. He, too, remained stiff, his gaze trained on Smith. If she had to guess, McJay was compiling a list of snap judgments about Smith's French cuff shirt and polished shoes.
Would you like to hold him?
She finally asked Smith, having confirmed with a quick sniff that Colt's diaper wasn't stinky. She noticed Ian's jaw clench.
I would.
Smith gingerly reached out to accept the squirmy bundle.
He fusses a lot, so don't take it personally, she warned, her arms a bit shaky.
Got it. Smith stared, apparently still thunderstruck by the reality of this visit. When Gentry placed Colt in his father's arms for the first time, she had to fight to catch her breath. Smith's frame dwarfed their son. Their son. Those words sounded odd after 2 months of Colt being only hers. But now they stood in her home, together, like a real family. Colt finally had his father. She hoped to wipe her wet cheeks without being noticed. Smith was too mesmerized by Colt to see anything else, but Ian handed her a tissue, which then drew Smith's attention. His eyes shone with misty tears, too.
Sorry, she sniffled, relinquishing all pride. It's a little overwhelming to see you two together. And not just because it's clear that Colt got none of my genes, she teased, but the joke didn't help her breathe any easier.
Smith cleared his throat.
Seeing him in person, even without the DNA results, I'd know he's mine.
He sniffed his child's moisturized skin, touched his chubby cheeks, and kissed his downy head. Colt fussed a bit, seeking the comfort of familiar arms. Smith tried swaying and speaking softly, but it only ramped up their willful son. With a half-cocked grin, Smith glanced at Gentry.
I think maybe he got a few of your genes, after all.
She welcomed the laughter that burst from her chest. It boded well that Smith joked with the easy repartee they'd shared last year. Earlier, she'd been unsure whether he'd arrive with latent anger and bitterness. His pleasant mood helped her relax, even if it proved that Colt's ornery side definitely came from her. "Let's lay him on the blanket and sit on the floor. He's probably a little nervous because he doesn't know you yet." She took Colt, whispered lovingly in his ear, and laid him on the blanket she'd spread earlier. Smith watched them intently, as did Ian. She tugged at her short skirt and tucked her legs to one side. "I should have asked if you're thirsty or anything."
"I'm good, thanks. Just tell me all about him."
Smith's fascinated gaze studied Colt, even as he casually stretched onto his side nearby, propped up by one elbow. Gentry recalled the earliest days following Colt's birth, when she couldn't tear her eyes away from him. Even with his constant crying, hours would pass where she'd done nothing but catalog the shades of his skin, count his tiny eyelashes, stroke the minuscule fingernails. She'd memorized the swirling pattern of his hair, cradled him to her chest, and marveled at the miracle of her own body's ability to have produced this tiny new life. Colt had been, and continued to be, the most wondrous part of her life. She almost envied Smith for experiencing that novelty now, but guilt about how he'd been denied months of knowing his son tempered the feeling. While she recited a long list of facts about Colt, Ian didn't speak. He stood to the side, his only movement being the rise and fall of his chest. In other words, he'd transformed into a living statue.
"Does he sleep through the night yet?" Smith asked.
"Not really. He'd probably sleep better if I put a little rice cereal in his bottle, but the pediatrician says to wait. Normally, I don't care much for rules, but I'm afraid to take chances with his health."
"My sister started her daughter, Mia, on solids ahead of schedule, but I think she was 5 months old at the time. I can't remember for sure."
Smith held out his fingers for Colt to grasp, and then smiled as he moved Colt's arms around. Colt pumped his legs a few times.
"Mia's one now."
The fact that Colt had more cousins filled Gentry with warmth. "So your sister will give you tips?"
"Her name's Patty, and yes, she will. She's older, more like a mother than a sister most of the time."
He rolled his eyes in a good-natured way.
"She's got a 3-year-old daughter, too, Cammy."
"She must be busy."
Gentry tucked her hair behind her ear, curious about his family, but choosing to let him fill her in at his own pace.
"You sound close."
"We are, but she and my dad live in Pasadena, where I grew up. I moved to San Francisco for work."
He spared her a brief glance.
"What about your family?"
"We're all here in Lake Sandy. I have an older brother and sister. For the most part, we all work together at the family business."
"Cabot Tea Company."
He shook his head, although his attention remained on Colt's expressions and gurgling. The familiar mixture of pride and resentment arose whenever Gentry discussed CTC, the entity that had given and taken so much.
"When I saw that online, I about fell off my chair for the second time. You're one surprise after another, Gentry."
"Keep things interesting and fun," she joked.
She didn't shoot Ian a pointed look, even though that comment deserved some emphasis. Smith smiled beneath a warm gaze.
"I remember that about you, too."
Ian cleared his throat. The sound oddly soothed her. It smacked of jealousy, which meant he wasn't nearly as unaffected by all this as he pretended. He cared, just like she wanted him to. Smith glanced at Ian.
Sorry.
If you'll both excuse me for a minute. Ian wandered around the corner without another word. Once Ian disappeared, Smith lowered his voice.
What's the story with you two?
It's complicated. Nothing like the stark truth to slap her back to reality.
How so?
He's Colt's temporary nanny. Long story. Smith's expression grew more intrigued.
He lives here.
For now. He'll be leaving the States soon. Humanitarian work.
So you aren't together?
He tickled Colt's belly while speaking to her. Like I said, it's complicated. Gentry picked at the threads of the corner of Colt's blanket.
I'm not big on complicated. I prefer easy.
He winked, but she didn't want to read too much into that remark.
Will you put Colt in daycare once Ian goes?
Yes. Smith's expression shifted.
Did you consider taking more time off from work until he's a little older?
Keeping a straight face, she replied, Actually, I hoped you'd stop working for a few months and watch Colt so I can help launch my company's new product. She fought a smirk while she watched Smith's reaction.
Sorry.
Smith flushed when he chuckled.
I forgot to mention my family's half Neanderthal. I didn't mean to offend you.
Big points, she thought. He got her dry humor and apologized easily. Two fine traits. All in all, things could be much worse. Now, he studied her, wearing an odd grin. What? She self-consciously tongued her teeth, probing for lettuce or a poppy seed from her earlier bagel. He shrugged, humor lighting up his eyes.
You didn't strike me as so career-oriented when we met.
In truth, she'd been undisciplined and untethered at that point in her life. Rather than confess that, she defaulted to her favorite old saying. Sometimes you've gotta break the rules and set yourself free. Colt kicked and wailed, as if realizing he'd lost their undivided attention. God, he was exactly like her. Smith pumped Colt's legs and made googly eyes at his son. Then, with a serious expression, he said,
Except, in our case, breaking the rules didn't set us free at all. In fact, it sort of tied us together for life.
Even in the kitchen, Ian couldn't escape Smith's presence. The man's jovial, confident voice, his insufferable ego, consumed the whole condo. It'd probably linger after he left, saturating everything, like cigarette smoke.
I didn't expect to be already falling in love with him, Smith exclaimed from the other room,
the note of pride obvious to anyone listening. He has that effect on people, Gentry replied. Ian couldn't decipher the tone of her voice. She teased all the time, but without seeing her face, he wasn't sure if it had been a deflection or something warmer. He crept to the kitchen door to spy on them. Smith was sitting up now, holding Colt in the air like he was inspecting a melon. The man's crooked grin made him even better looking. All week, Ian had held himself on a leash, separated his desires and fantasies from reality and fairness, considered the time Archer had spent with him and the money they'd already raised and committed. The community awaiting their help? He'd weighed all of that against his feelings for Gentry and Colt, the suddenness of which made them seem an illusion that would surely end up disappointing all of them. And then there was Smith,
His behavior suggested he might have some lingering personal interest in the mother of his child.
If Smith was good for Colt and Gentry,